Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Each month, over 80,000 people download podcasts produced from the fevered mind of Roy Field Brown. They cover a gamut of topics like maps, politics, American presidents, history, the Archers, Formula One, Jamaican culture, and Englishness. Go to wherever you get your podcast and type in Roy Field Brown to discover a new favorite podcast today.
This podcast is a Roy Field Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
I thought I'd record the theme tune on the flute. This is Jenny from Alexandria.
This week's Dumpty Dum is from our Jenny Bronder, and the podcast is sponsored by Ms. C.A. Cox.
This is Dumpty Dum, this show about the reality ducky drama that is centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the cast of Pergola, who is Roy Field Brown, and I am here today with the downtrodden dairy worker, who is
Jacqueline Berthaud in Brittany, France. Now, on this episode, we have a very select group of colonists. We hear from Witherspoon, who's pretty pissed off. Jen from Ambridge Pony Club, who speculates about the Ulster farming community. And Q, he's back, who is channeling the East Midlands. We also have a new and regular feature from our Stephen, who can always be relied upon to explain the ins and outs of some of our favourite Ambridge institutions. And this week, in honour of Brian's new accommodation, we have the story of Blossom Hill Cottage, and it's a cracker.
Plus, folks, we're going to have Tweet of the Week from our purple pumpkin, our Theo, and the social media roundup from our Sandra. Don't forget, folks, if you search for Dumpty Dum on YouTube, guess what you'll find? Dumpty Dum on YouTube. You'll find hours of interviews where I, in conjunction with you, some of the great listeners of Dumpty Dum, interview the Archers actors.
And of course, we should be wishing a very warm welcome to the 10 new members of our Facebook group. Shall we talk about Birmingham now?
Folks, you know that if you've been paying any attention to this podcast or to the Academic Archers on Facebook or to Dumpty Dum on Facebook, you will know that we are having a big Right Royal meetup in Birmingham on April the 22nd to the 23rd. That's the Saturday to the Sunday. There is actually a little bit of an aperitif, an amuse-bouche on the Friday, but I'll talk about that another time. Fundamentally, what you need to do is divvy up some money, put your glad rags on, and have yourself a Right Royal Archers time, because it's going to be awesome. All manner of fantastic. Now, there's going to be all manner of panels at the Birmingham Symphony Hall. Symphony Hall, Jacqueline. I tell you.
I know. Amazing. It looks amazing. We're going to be real grown-ups, Royfield.
You speak for yourself. Be yourself. I don't disappoint anybody. I'm going to manage expectations. I'm just going to be me. You can vault into adulthood and be all grown up and proper. I'm just going to be me. There's going to be a whole load of panels about various aspects of the Archers put on by those clever people, the academic Archers. We'll be interviewing people. We'll be doing a live bungee jump. It's going to be fantastic. And then that goes on till the Sunday, where there's going to be a live listen along to the Omnibus, and then also a live dumby dum with us and Sonny Ormond. Now, it's priced at too cheap, if you ask me. £90 for the whole weekend. Now, what that's going to get you is all the panels on the Saturday, all the goings on Sunday, and a meal. Basically, you can't go out in London and get a meal for less than £90. You get all of that, a day and a half's worth of entertainment and a meal. That's priced at £90. You can come along just for the Saturday. You can have a weekend pass without the meal. Go on to dumdydum.com. All the details are there. You can pick whatever package suits you, but we'd love to have you for dinner. Now, the last time I checked, over half of all the dinner reservations have gone. So you need to be quick. The dinner is going to be on Saturday night at the Cozy Club. We've got a great menu. You can view it online, pick what you want, but it's priced, that element is priced at £30. Oof, there you go. Is there anything I've missed out? Oh, there's going to be some knitting going on. I hear knitting is pretty big in the... Oh, sorry, is it crafting? Sorry,
oh, gosh.
Stitching.
So,
stitching.
Why don't you listen? Why don't you... Oh, that's it, you've got it now. It's stitching. We're promoting a quilt that was made on Archer's themes over the last couple of Archer's Omnibus Archer's Academics with Nick Waken-Kraken. And we're also building our own new piece for this year with lots of embroidery and pieces of textile art, which we'll celebrate the whole weekend. And we're hoping to get people to buy tickets for it and give the money to charity. So we'll see how that goes.
So is the whole idea that it tells a story of the weekend, a la the Bayeux tapestry, that type of thing?
No, it's more a story of what is happening at Ambridge, a little history of Ambridge. So there are little maps, there are places, there are subtle references going in to life in Ambridge and things that have happened, like AOP2 and those kinds
of things. So wait a minute, is it, you're asking people to drive, fly, catch a train from wherever they live to come all the way to Birmingham to stitch. Is that fundamentally it?
Yeah, why not? Stitching is the fundamentals of life. Wow. Creating a beautiful piece of textile around the things that we love is all what is everything that life is about, Royfield Brown.
Wow.
Maybe that's why you're not as happy as I am.
I tell you what, excitement abounds with that. Do you know what I mean? Come to Birmingham to stitch, folks. So, what are you
so
doing?
Cynical? You'll love it.
No,
I'm not.
Listen, trust me. I'm not. I'm here to be wowed by the spectacle of Archer's fans stitching. Now, what's all this about these speakers and events being promoted on a daily basis?
Ah, yes. So, Cara Courage from Academic Archers put together a little everyday notice, and I've been charged with putting them onto our Dum-de-Dum Facebook page. So I've been putting them on, and there's always a link in there to buy your tickets if you want. But it also explains on a day-to-day basis one of the things that the speakers are talking about, who they are, and what we're going to be hearing about. It's pretty wow. I'll tell you what. Talk about imposter syndrome. I'm the first speaker on the first day, and I am petrified now, having read the rest of them. I shall carry on putting them on Facebook and pretending I know what I'm talking about. Yeah, so there we go.
Well done, you. Now, we do need you to send us in some dum-de-dums, folks. Give us a bank of tunes so we can play them in the future. So if you fancy singing with your friends or family, tooting on your tin whistle, or sending us a full orchestral rendition of Barwick Green, please send it to us. And today's a belter, was it not?
It was indeed, and a new one. First time we've heard that one. But before we go any further, let's have a look at the week in Ambridge from our Sui, Queen or Tart.
Hello, lovely people. It's Sui, Queen or Tart on the Twitters here, and this week in Ambridge. Eddie appears to have been behaving, well, just like Eddie, frankly. Clarilove was fed up with it, and when Helen announced that she and Susan were getting 2 days unpaid leave because of the window installation, they bunked off. Helen was lucky that they didn't go on a strike, frankly. Industrial relations at Bridge Farm are, well, non-existent, particularly foisting a new uniform on them, and there's no mention of whether it's got pockets or not. Eddie turns out to have been arranging with Neil to relocate the Carter's pergola into Grange Farm. Nice for Clary to get Susan's cast-offs. Not. Eddie, you could have bought her something new. I was so pleased she gave him a shop-bought cake. Good on you, Clary, love. Brian dropped a bombshell after an outing with Alice, and they met up with Joy, who was wearing Jenny Darling's scarf, acquired at the WI store. He is leaving Willow Cottage, but it turns out he's only going round the corner for effectively to move to Blossom Hill, Stappy Cottage, for a new life of tinned custard, maybe. Paul saw his first lamb born, and we heard he was swapping back with Denise. No point in him moving into the spare room at the stables, but it turns out Denise isn't coming back yet. She's going to go somewhere else for a while. Hopefully, Josh and Lily haven't moved anyone else in yet. He and Jacob and Alistair did an escape room on Friday, which would have been Paul's last day. Jacob seems very well suited to escape rooms. Not so much Alistair. I love an escape room. I've done about 50 of them. Go and try one out. Brian and Adam went to Cheltenham together, and they had a touching family chinwag. And Brian won money on osses. Ben also had a long chat this week with Sykesy, who turns out to know Jill. She had come into the Laurels and brought a birthday cake for Ben. What a nice lad he is to go in early on his birthday. Astonishingly, no one turned up to ogle Clary and Susan through the new window. Jimmus wants a top hat, presumably something to do with oppressing the EV charging station. I'm sure all will be revealed in the fullness of time. So, not a lot this week, other than having a new pergola, new windows, new house to live in. That's enough, isn't it? Anyway, until next week, my lovelies, hope it's a good one.
For me, this felt like The Archers of old. It felt like a very comfortable, like, mid-90s episode. We had the Carters and the Grundys. We had Clary not quite trusting Eddie. Eddie was up to something. But we all knew this was going to be something lovely as opposed to his old shenanigans.
Yeah, but it made her uncomfortable. I don't like that. Even when he's doing something nice, why does it always have to be Clary that suffers to go through stuff? She was so uncomfortable. She was so unhappy about it. Okay, it was a lovely ending. Yeah, I like the fact that she's got a pergola somewhere to sit in the garden. But
it was a happy ending, and everybody likes a happy ending, don't they?
Yeah, we do. I loved a happy ending. And everybody said, oh, we love you and I love you and you're the one for me. And that was all so smoochy and lovely.
This was a weak attempt at humour, considering I've just come back from Thailand, about the happy ending. But... moving on from that. And no, I didn't, by the
way.
Sorry,
I'm not a humorous person, apparently.
But it felt, on the one part, I found that very comforting. It felt like a cuddle from me mum. Susan. Susan having to counsel her. Susan and Clary had their little away day, etc.
Wasn't that lovely? Now, that was lovely. They had two away days, and I really liked that. Yeah.
And then it was... Neil and Eddie in cahoots. Yeah. It felt like good old-fashioned Archers.
But so is there anything that's grated with you, Royfield, this week?
I put it to you, though. Was it lazy Archers? Considering we all knew it was going to be something lovely. It was going to be no malfeasance. There was one part of me just said, isn't that just a little bit lazy?
I don't know about lazy, because I quite like the yummy, friendly... cutesy, old-fashioned storylines when after we've had a bit of drama, we've had a bit of trauma. There's always the trauma going on with Alice. Alice worries me all the time. Her addiction and her taking things hard. We had all that ridiculousness of her and Adam trying to tell Brian what he wanted and that how she would react to her, to Brian deciding that he knows what he wants and not her. And I felt she wobbled a lot this week, Alice. And so that always worries me because I don't want her to fail in her sobriety. So, in fact, it was a light relief to have all the Neil, Clary and Susan stuff. But I have to say, I do a bit of craft fairing. I could even do with a fiddler fest.
Wow.
I can't really... It shows, what was it? F, something fiddler's fest on a Wednesday.
The Felfisham Fiddlers Fest, was it?
It wasn't quite Felfisham, was it? But it was somewhere else.
I don't know. Every now and then, this show reminds me that I'm not quite its core demographic when there's a Fiddlers Fest and people are getting down at a Fiddlers Fest. I'm like, what am I listening to here?
Yeah, it was one of those weeks, wasn't it, when you think, oh, this person I've been banging on for 25 years to this person about this fantastic radio show that I love and that I'm addicted to and that I follow. And if they listened this week, they'd think it was written by Benny Hill. I criticise their writers.
I think it's one of those weeks where people can read into it and almost take out what they want. I know Witherspoon later on is going to talk about a line which smacks for him of kind of homophobia, which went over my head. So I don't know what that says about me. Yeah, it's just one of those weeks where not a lot happened, but I've always been the king of, I love it when nothing much happens in the Archers. For me, the reason why this week wasn't exactly a Stella week is because, not that Stella was even on mic.
I was going to say, where was Stella in it? I missed that.
It's because the Grundy and Carters thing was Archers of old. So I'm going to put that to one side. And I didn't feel there was that much character exploration. Yes, Brian, we're now seeing a pattern of Brian deciding that I am moving on with my life. Jenny's stuff is gone. I'm even going to move out of Willow Cottage. Yes, there was that. This Sykesy thing. What's all that about? I'm just...
We forgave them. We forgave them for that, didn't we, a few weeks ago, because when he was first introduced, because we said, oh, that's a way of showing that Ben is good at getting on with people, blah, blah, blah.
But yeah.
I can't quite see where it's going now, because he's just a funny character. Ben doesn't need that.
I say it all the time. We have so many characters who are silent. We don't need the Sykesy person to go anywhere. At least I don't anyway.
No.
All he needed to be, as you said, was an illustration of Ben being able to cope with pressure.
Yeah.
He even said, that's my work phone that's ringing. This is my own phone. And no, yeah. I don't need to. So he could handle pressure, move on. I was never the biggest Jasper Carrot fan in the first place, if I'm being honest with you. Yeah, I was like, anyway, I suppose what we should do is go and hear what our Stephen has got in his memory box about Blossom Hill Cottage, because here's somewhere which hasn't been mentioned for a little while, but has been key to the Archers before. So
it has.
Here we go.
Royfield, are you playing the first version or the second version?
I'm going to play the correct first version, which is, the second first version before I play the second segment, which there is only one version.
I'm just checking up on you.
Yes. All right. So Stephen sent in two versions of the first segment. I'm playing the second segment. And of the second segment, there's only one version. Do not worry. I've got it all worked out.
You need a mathematical degree to sort out. You're doing very well.
Here is our Stephen Bowden and Blossom Hill Cottage.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here is an illustrated summary of the news.
Brian's new home is rich in Archer's history. In fact, there's too much to cover in 2 minutes, so here is the first of 2 2-minute histories of Blossom Hill Cottage. In 1952, Blossom Hill Cottage was rented from the Bellamy estate by the Irish thriller writer Mike Daly as a rural retreat. In one of the most bizarre storylines in the history of the Archers, Daly was accused by Reggie Trentham, the director of the Grey Gables Country Club, of being Major John Smith of the Army Pay Corps, who had been cashiered for embezzling funds. Trentham had met John Smith's former girlfriend, Valerie Grayson, and with her in tow, he confronted Daly. Daly explained that, in fact, he was a spy who had been a prisoner in Dachau during the war and had escaped after a sympathetic German officer had certified him as being dead. Having Daly cashiered by the Pay Corps as Smith had been a ruse by MI6 to attract enemy agents, and Valerie, who was also an MI6 officer, had pretended to be his fiancée. This was apparently enough to satisfy Reggie, who ended up marrying Valerie. Not long afterwards, Mike Daly left the village. By 1958, Blossom Hill Cottage was being rented from the Bellamy estate by John Tregoran, who was having a hard time. One evening, Carol Gray found him drunk in the Bear Hotel in Borchester and took him home to the cottage, only to be spotted leaving at 1:30 in the morning by Charles Grenville's housekeeper, the mysterious Madame Garonne, who'd gossiped about this shocking behaviour. It later turned out that Madame Garonne was an international diamond smuggler. Carol Gray went on to marry Charles Grenville, and then some years later, after Charles's death, she married John Tregoran. Roger Travers Macy moved into Blossom Hill Cottage in the mid-60s, and after he married Jennifer in 1968, they lived there at the weekends, spending the week living in a flat above Featherstone's bookshop in Borchester. In 1989, Lillian Bellamy sold the Bellamy estate but retained Blossom Hill Cottage where her mother was living. While Peggy was there, the cottage suffered both a burglary and a fire. And in 1991, when Peggy married Jack Woolley, she moved out, leaving it empty. Later that year, Kate Aldridge and her gang, that's Helen Archer, Brenda Tucker and William Grundy, broke in and discovered letters dating back to the Second World War from Con Korchmar, an American GI, to Peggy. Kate forged a letter back from Peggy to Con, whereupon Con turned up in Ambridge, much to Peggy's embarrassment. Then, in the autumn of 1993, Lillian sold the cottage to Usher, who had decided to move out of Borchester and sample the joys of rural life.
Oh, there you go.
Tell you what, Royfield, I'm shocked by that. I didn't know any of that. I knew the bit about the Con, the American GI, and I knew all the things about...
How do you know that? How do you know?
I remember it. I remember it. I remember it from my listening. But all that earlier stuff. Now, I have to say, people tell us that they don't like the current storylines with the... What's that noise? Make that noise. Make that EastEnders noise. Dun, 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 dun. Exactly. You've got that one down to a fine art and I can never remember it. But all those spies, MI6, John Tregoran, fires, burglaries, they were the real EastEnders scripts in those days, wasn't it, for Blossom Hill?
You know what? It sounded bonkers. And dare I say it, it sounded like a load of rubbish, to be honest about it. Right. The quality of the, let's say the plotting, because maybe it was written sublimely, but to have it just sounded utter lunacy. And
what,
yes,
to do with one cottage? Imagine what was going on in the rest of the village.
I suppose straight after the war, because this thing starts 1951, 1952, there's going to be some level of an appetite to hear about escaped prisoners.
Yeah.
And whatever. And I think this tells us not only about the time, but also about drama on the BBC. This was akin to Dick Barton back then.
Yeah.
I've listened to, there is, you can go onto YouTube and you can hear really old episodes of The Archers.
Can you? Oh, I've never tried.
There is one, and I'm like, real old. We're not talking about 10 years ago. We're talking about 1950s. There's this one episode and it's people in the Bull just singing folk songs. It's dreadful. It's not even like you go, oh, that's really endearing. It's literally, all right there, Jethro, have you got yourselves a song?
Oh, yes, I have.
Oh, delay, 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 oh, delay, delay, oh, delay, oh, delay, delay, oh. And somebody says, oh, I've got another song I would like to sing. Oh, please sing your song, little Billy. I once walked down to Lakey Hill, and that's the whole episode.
It's crazy.
Bad. When it was bad.
I wonder when that. Oh, I wonder. I'm sure Stephen or somebody equally erudite will be able to tell us when did things really start to change when we got storylines around the families, things happening in the families rather than general country village stuff.
I think there were a lot of filler episodes. And the one where they are singing folk songs in the Bull, and they
I think I've heard you talk about this before, actually.
Yeah, because it's so stunningly bad. It's so stunningly bad. Anyone who's connected with that show is so long past, so we can be really honest about it. It was bad.
Because
apart from Peggy, of course, because she was in it. So
actually, that's a very good point as to whether she was actually in that episode, because I can't remember. But if you go back to, so the dawn of ITV, where the Grace Archer gets...
In the fire.
Meets her end in the fire. You can listen to that. And okay, it's a little bit stagey. It's like,
yeah,
where's Grace?
It's good. No,
but
don't
it's good.
Go.
Exactly. It's like, I'm just going to go in there and get whatever the name of the horse is.
Yeah.
Halt this. Don't go, Grace. I just have to go and get him, Phil. All of that.
Yeah.
And it's a bit stagey, but it's not bad. Yeah. So I think they had episodes where they just had to fill dead air. And boy, oh boy, did they really point the neon sign going, dead air, dead air. Did they really point to those episodes as being ones where they hadn't thought about it? Anyway, Stephen, awesome. And
brilliant.
We still
absolutely
have a second part of
that. Yeah, looking
forward
to that.
But what we should do is invite the rest of the community to have their say on the last week in Ambridge.
Yeah.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Ah, folks, you thought he was a voice you'd never hear again. But oh no, he's like the flu. He keeps on coming around again. It's our Quentin in the East Midlands.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. It's Q here. I felt compelled to call in because as someone who's lived in the region for over 30 years, I cheered from the rooftops when the East Midlands got a name check from Alistair in relation to Denise moving to a different practice for another 6 months or so. I could imagine her in a practice perhaps in Ashby de la Zouche, which isn't too far from West Midlands. I cheered because for years we've always been the poor relation, if you like, to the mighty West Midlands, and we weren't really recognised as a region. And bit by bit we were. We had the two regional news programmes set up. I worked for one of them. And we had an East Midlands Development Agency, long gone, of course. Then we started to get name checks on the national weather forecast. So for the Archers to actually acknowledge the East Midlands surely is the ultimate accolade, and it now proves that we in the East Midlands actually... A couple of other things. Delighted Brian isn't fleeing Ambridge, as we all know. I'm a big fan of Brian. So I'm pleased that he's still hanging around, but like others on Twitter, slightly worried about that sticky back door. Ooh, might that lead to problems? Is an intruder going to come in and do something horrible to our Brian? Hopefully not. Anyway, those are my thoughts for this week. Up the East Midlands, and of course we all have to flog to the West Midlands to meet up next month. Hope to see a lot of you there. But in the meantime, let's see what the Brummy and the yellow belly have to say about my thoughts.
I know that somebody from Lincolnshire is called the yellow belly.
Yeah, Lincolnshire yellow bellies. on my Twitter profile. I even had bit that.
Oh.
Didn't know. I've learned something new. Thank you for that, Miss Serena.
Mr. Q, sticky, yes.
Yeah, sticky back doors. You ever had a sticky back door?
Nah. If I had, I fixed it very quickly.
Really?
Yeah.
You're handy with your back doors, are you?
I'm definitely handy with the back door, with any door. When they hate.
Is that more Mr. Berto's department?
Yeah, bloody joking.
Really?
Yeah. Lerick is a great believer in if something doesn't work, tell your wife to sort it by asking someone else.
That's very interesting. I'll tell you one thing that I've noticed about the Americans, or at least Californians, or at least people that I've encountered in California, much more handy than us Brits.
Really?
I know quite a few women who are just like, shelf needs putting up, they'll put it up. No hassle. Yeah. None of this. And they even have the correct power tools.
Yeah.
Very handy. Not intimidated by anything. Me, I'm like, let's just call a professional. And they're like, it's ridiculous. You're only just putting up a shelf. All you need is a masonry drill and some raw plugs and some blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Very handy.
And a level, a spirit level. Mm. Very important in my
look at you. Yeah. Well, I tell you what, because I know you're going to be in Birmingham in just over a month's time.
Yeah, anything that needs doing. A load of jobs at your mother's.
I'll probably have my place by then. So I'm thinking, you know, get you round. You can come to England with your toolbox. That'd be awesome.
I'll make sure it's in there.
Talk about the East Midlands being forgotten. Come on now.
Yeah. Now, in fact, if you Google East Midlands, UK, in Google Maps, East Midlands goes a long way, a very long way. It goes from west of Derby, which almost touches Birmingham, of course, right the way through to the east coast, Gignes, Boston, and all the rest of it, almost to Immingham. Immingham is just outside. Let me show you this. You see that?
I can see that. So what she's doing, folks, is showing me that she's got an iPhone, one of the latest ones of iPhone, with a map. And yes, it's extensive. But you know what, though? As big as it is a bit bland, the East Midlands.
But come on. But listen, how will someone as resourceful as Denise survive in the East Midlands then if it's all very bland?
I think she'd do pretty well. But I'm just knocking the whole region as a whole.
You have no idea because you're
travelled through it. No, I've travelled through it on the motorway, getting to somewhere of worth.
What motorway? There are no motorways.
If I'm going from London to Leeds, how am I getting to Leeds? Driving up the M1, which goes through the East Midlands. Come on now.
Yeah, I suppose it does. Yeah, kind of crosses across Nottingham, doesn't it, to Sheffield.
There you go. And there's nothing to see here. That's what I would say. You know, Nottingham's all a bit nice. Leicester. Oh, good curry.
Oh, Leicester. Q, I think we need to beat him up a bit.
What? You're bringing violence to the podcast.
Indeed. Well, I'm sorry, if you're going to be that rude about the East Midlands.
Anyway, I'm just saying, it's a bit meh. There you go. Or, well, that's as the kids say, a bit mid.
I shall have to introduce that to my students. A bit mid.
Exactly.
The right place.
Like Yorkshire.
For it and everything.
Yorkshire's got character. It's a big, brash, bold county. Asserts itself. Lancashire.
Scary.
Merseyside. Lord. Hey, come on now. The Southwest.
Just made me stop and think. We mustn't forget we're here to talk about the Archers.
Oh, we are. And what actor in the Archers has a Merseyside accent? And the answer is, just to tie this up with Liverpool.
God knows.
Kirsty's accent is from Southport, which is just north of Liverpool. And Annabelle Dowling, who plays her, has told me this on a couple of occasions, that when she first came in, I think she was broad Scouse, but now she's toned it down and it's more of her speaking
voice. Yeah, right.
And it's Southport.
Southport, right. Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting because I've been reading a series of books set in that area.
Wait a minute. We're talking about the Archers. You just corrected me. You're about to go off on a tangent about your plumbing books.
As always, bloody books. Yeah, sorry.
Anyway,
sorry.
All right. Anyway, right. So hold that thought because now we travel from one great port city to another. We've mentioned Liverpool. We've mentioned Southport. Now we go to New York, to the upper, lower, east, west side. And it's Hour with the Spoon.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Royfield, Jacqueline, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. I was planning to take the week off from caller entering, but then a character goes and says something that really pisses me off. No, not Allison Adams' ageist and patronizing comments. I'll let other caller enterers handle that. This week it was Jakob. First off, he would never, ever have said me and Alistair. I noticed the scriptwriters often use the objective case me when it should be the subjective case. I imagine Jakob paid attention in English grammar class, and is much too precise. He would have said Alistair and I, but I digress. No, it was Jakob's expression of fear that Paul would try to get Alistair and him to, in his words, perform ABBA in full bling, or what he really meant to say was full drag. That upset me. What a homophobic and transphobic thing to say. Was this an expression of Jakob's unconscious biases, or of the scriptwriters? It smacks of the homosexual panic legal defense that defendants who assaulted or killed LGBT people have used. It was especially popular in the 1970s and 1980s, when gay bashing was on the significant rise, but is still used today. In doing some research on this, I read that in the UK it's known as the Portsmouth or Guardsman defense. In the United States, bills to outlaw this defense have been introduced into Congress, but have not gotten out of committee. Am I being too sensitive? I think not, especially as I was the victim of a gay bashing in 1983. I really don't want to get too heavy here. Trying to get out of an escape room is intellectually challenging, though it didn't deserve an award, and was only mediocre radio listening. Dancing to ABBA would have been much more fun. Talk to you soon.
Mm. Yeah, I'd have gone with the dancing.
I'm inclined to agree about the Friday episode in the escape room. It did not make for interesting listening at all.
I was quite fascinated by it because I've never been in an escape room, and I have no desire to go into an escape room. The thought of being locked in somewhere with other people, couldn't cope with it. But yeah, it was quite interesting, and it was all too. Paul was too over the top. It's like you guys. It somehow it doesn't ring true. He wouldn't keep saying, "Come on, you guys, we'll do this, you guys. We've got to do."
I honestly don't know because I don't know the character well enough. Not invested, so I'm a bit like. But I think Witherspoon brought up a great philosophical point, because with my cis heterosexual ears, I didn't hear that slur, right?
So
was it in? You did.
I did. But you're very sensitive about certain things, but I think you're also skim. I don't know.
Oh, absolutely.
I felt that it was too much of a cartoon. When Jakob said, "Oh God, I thought he was going to get us singing ABBA, blah, blah, blah," in the full blah, that really cheesed me off as well. I felt quite affronted.
But for me, the thing which is really interesting about what Witherspoon said was, is this the writer's subconscious prejudice, or was that deliberately put there for the character? And I don't know. I don't know.
No, I'm sure either.
If we were to go back, let's say 15 years, and look at the treatment of various minorities and people's casual assumptions on the archers, we'd be like, oh, that's a bit off now. But at the time, it was either seen as acceptable, or it just went over people's heads. You didn't even realize that was a slur. So I think that is a great philosophical point. I wonder how much I say to my gay friends, of which is, let's say, casual or teasing, which could be construed as being that I'm othering somehow.
Yeah.
But because they know that I'm not homophobic, they're just going, "Oh, that's just Royfield being Royfield." I said, Witherspoon's comment made me think, was that deliberately put there, or was this subconsciously the bias of the writer?
No, I don't know either, Royfield. But in fact, when you think about it, people of our generation, if I could dare lump myself with you as a generation, we grew up with those kind of casual comments about things. And also our humour tends to be a bit on the sarcastic-y side, a bit. British humour in general is deprecating, pulling ourselves down and pulling other people down in a kind of sarcastic way, in which I can imagine Jacob being totally invested in that as a kind of, ooh, as his way of being humorous. We'll see. Mm. I don't know. But I understand when you come from Witherspoon's point of view, when he's obviously suffered from gay bashing at the...
Yeah, and that was dreadful. Well, yeah.
Absolutely awful. I can't imagine. And I would be hypersensitive to that if I was him as well. And I quite understand his comments.
The last thing I would say, which is very much related to the first thing in terms of, was this subconscious by the writer or is it deliberately put in, that same-sex marriage has only been legal for what, 15 years, something like that. There are many people that still do not think that homosexuality is right. They say that it is abnormal. Those people are rapidly in decline, but there are people that say that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if those attitudes, whether they're conscious or subconscious, are still prevalent in society, isn't it then that we have somebody just makes a casual comment which could be construed as being softly homophobic?
I think quite normal in the circumstances, in the setting. Yeah, absolutely. So it is realistic that Jacob would have said that.
Yeah, and it's something which I say about casual descriptions of black people. You know, no one ever says in The Archers, oh, Nola Tando, the black girl.
No.
And in real life, that would be said all the time. Anyway, let us move on. Mr. Spoon from the Upper Lower East West Side, we thank you for your contribution, sir. As always, you've done our make us think, sir. Now, it's the time, good people, where I say the best and the easiest way for you to record a message or a plot prediction is to go to www.speakpipe.com/dumdydum. Don't forget the T in the middle. And you'll also find a link in them there show notes.
Or you can send us a voice note via WhatsApp on 0044 7957 167 696. We need your calls in by 6 PM on Sunday UK time. Please keep your call to a maximum of 2 minutes and bear in mind that you need to be at least 18 to take part.
Now, folks, this is the People's Podcast. There are a few things that you can do to help out this communal effort. First off, if you haven't done so already, hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcatcher you use. Secondly, if you wouldn't be so kind, give us a 5-star review. It'd be hugely appreciated. But to thine own self be true, as Shakespeare once wrote. If you think we only deserve 3, give us 3. Anyway, write us a review on Apple Podcasts. It would be most appreciated.
And you know, Royfield, for the second week running this week, we've had no reviews.
Don't even mention it. They're going to come to our raid this week. I feel it in my water. Let's be positive.
Well, I do hope so. So please, people, get onto iTunes and leave us an updated review. You can update your reviews. You don't need to, just because you made one, you don't need to think, oh, I've done that. We can go back in and do it again.
Look at you with your knowledge of all things technical. And finally, the third and the last thing that you can do is consider becoming a patron. Patreon is a way of tipping creators like us, and there are different levels with different rewards. So if you just go to patreon.com, search for dumdydum, we'd be chuffed to bits to have your financial as well as moral support. Now, also what you can do is go and hit the donate button on our website on dumdydum.com, which is exactly what some years ago Miss C.A. Cox did. She actually donates not through Patreon, but through PayPal. So there are different ways you can help out your favorite podcast. So do what Miss C.A. Cox did and you can become a sponsor of the show. Oh, there you go. Now, you've heard part one. Now we're going to part two. Brace yourself, everybody. Things now get dramatic. This is Blossom Hill Cottage, part deux.
Here is an illustrated summary of the news.
Here is the second and last two-minute history of Blossom Hill Cottage. In case you're wondering where it is on the edge of Ambridge, to the north of the village green, just beyond the cricket ground. before you get to the lodge and the entrance to Grey Gables. We left Blossom Hill Cottage in 1993 in the hands of its new owner, Usha Gupta. In 1995, Usha was mugged after an evening out with Richard Locke, the village doctor. Then a rock was thrown through the window of the cottage, and next a swastika and racist slogans were painted on the walls. Finally, Usha had ammonia thrown in her face. This series of attacks was mounted by a small gang led by Spanner Bridges and including the 17-year-old Roy Tucker. Usha nearly sold up to move back to Borchester, but was persuaded to stay by Dr. Locke, who had moved into her spare room and then into her heart and her bedroom. Usha lived at Blossom Hill Cottage until 2008, when she married Alan Franks. She moved into the vicarage and decided to let the cottage, furnished with quite a bit of Alan's old stuff. This didn't go well, and only after persuading Alan that the furniture had to go did she manage to find a tenant. That tenant was Jim Lloyd, who hadn't told Shula and Alistair that he was moving out of the stables. One of Jim's first moves was to allow the washing machine to flood the kitchen. Things improved, though, and by the end of 2009, Jim was trying to buy Blossom Hill Cottage from Usha. She turned down his offer, but he stayed on as a tenant. By 2013, Jim had moved out, but Usha was able to find a new tenant, the herd manager for the estate dairy, a very nice man named Rod Titchener. Rob developed a relationship with Helen Archer, much to her father's displeasure, and after a disastrous tea at Bridge Farm in early 2014, Helen decided to take Henry and move into the cottage with Rob. Of course, we all know how that turned out. The kitchen of Blossom Hill Cottage was where Helen stabbed Rob after 2 years of coercive control, culminating in a disagreement over custard. Usha finally gave Rob notice to quit Blossom Hill Cottage in the autumn of 2016, and soon after that she let the place to Alistair's new veterinary partner, Anisha Jayakodi, who lived there until her departure to Newmarket in the summer of 2018.
There you go, folks.
Wow, very interesting.
And when I said it got spicy and dramatic in part two, I wasn't joking, was I?
I had
forgotten about the level of racist abuse that Usha had. I knew that something was pushed through the letterbox.
I remember the ammonia, but I had forgotten about the swastika. The swastika on the door that shocked me there in that little bit of that story.
And if we remember, Roy Tucker last year on The Archers did actually make reference to it, didn't he?
He did, He admitted to Adil that he'd been involved in some racist stuff in his youth, didn't he?
Yeah. And he said it was coercion. He went along with it as opposed to instigating it. But
yeah, and he did. It felt like that at the time as well, that he was just part of a gang. He wasn't an instigator, but he did it, and that's right. But he's obviously still feeling guilty about it. But what a great piece of work, Stephen, that I've learned more today about Blossom Hill Cottage than I didn't know that I didn't know. See what I mean?
All right. Stephen, you got to keep this up. You're setting yourself very high for yourself.
Very high standards.
Very, very high, sir. Right, so that's our Stephen Bowden, who you will have the ability to see
in the flesh.
If you come along to the Dum De Dum Archers Academic Mashup Weekend in Birmingham in just about a month's time. There you go.
Yeah, that's exciting.
All right. Now, we go to somebody else who's also going to be at the Archers Academic and Dum De Dum Mashup. It's Ambridge Pony Club, our Jen.
Greetings, everyone. Jen here. I'm really looking forward to the Archers Meetup. Can't wait to see Jacqueline and Royfield, and I believe our student Bowden is coming along, and all kinds of people with Nick, Wick and Kraken. It's going to be fantastic, and I hope as many as possible come along. Just going in on the Adam finally trying to decide to find his dad storyline. Typically, the Archers Twitterati seem to be better informed than the scriptwriters. Well, tweeted it's from the Book of the Archers, but I pass it on to Jacqueline to have a read of. But Adam has had at least a glimpse of his father in the past. I was a little bit disappointed in him as a father. Okay, this was a shock. He had a lot to take on board and think about himself. But we haven't heard one word out of him yet as to, I need to do this for Xander too. And Adam is Xander's only genetic relative that he actually has. We don't know where the egg came from. We don't know if they used a known or an anonymous donor there. He has his surrogate, who they've lost touch with, And obviously he has Ian, but genetic-wise, he would be pretty interested in the guy who was the biological father of Adam, because that's his genetics too. Yeah, bit disappointing that he hasn't really thought about the implications for Xander as well as himself. And then I find it very funny that Adam's biological father is from the Ulster farming community. Ian is from the Ulster farming community. Wouldn't it be absolutely hilarious if it turned out that they were second cousins or something along those lines? So anyway, it'll be interesting to see how that all turns out.
I always thought that Adam was very comfortable with the fact that he didn't know his biological father.
Yeah.
He makes no reference to it at all. Though I think, thinking about it as I'm speaking, the fact that he's always had this slightly frosty relationship with Brian.
Certainly in recent years.
Yeah. It is an acknowledgement that he's not an Aldridge, so to speak.
Yeah, maybe, but I do feel that Brian was very appreciative of his relationship with Adam and appreciative of Adam this week, which was a bit of a turnaround. But also, I think Adam's like many of us, you get on with life, don't you? Things happen in your life. He didn't know his father. And then something happens that suddenly he has a little bit of information, so that becomes a major topic in his brain. So it's not surprising, really, having read the letter to Jenny from Paddy, he's thinking about his father, but I don't know if it'll go anywhere. But it's quite interesting, the idea of the Ulster farmer and the Ulster child. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a cute connection, Jen. And in fact, Jen did send me a very interesting photo of a page about Paddy Redmond from a book. And I am blowed if I can find it. So I wanted to reread it this morning ahead of doing the podcast. I couldn't find it anywhere. So sorry about that, Jen. I'm pathetic. Email me things or messenger me things rather.
There is something which I've never really ever mentioned before. But every week you say somebody sent you something, has messaged you this, tweeted at you in your DMs that.
Yeah.
No one ever does that to me, and no one. I don't mean I get the odd thing.
I mean, astonishing.
Zero. No, seriously. No, nobody ever.
Astonishing.
Nobody ever. I never get a thing.
Yeah.
If I get anything, it's an email for Dumdy Dum, as opposed to Oi Mush, Royfield, blah, 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 blah. I'm absolutely nothing. Because nobody ever back channels me anything, DMs, emails, or anything, which I don't know what that means. But Jane Bassnett, who is on our Facebook group, I went to school with her.
Yeah.
Junior school.
Really?
Yeah. And she found you
through the podcast.
She found me through the podcast some time ago. And the only reason why I bring that up is because today I woke up to a couple of messages from the Green Home School Memorial Group. So this is where I went. So I left there in 1980, a long time ago. And people are thinking about doing a bit of a meetup. And Jane made a little quip and she said, oh, I think I'll come along after listening to the Archers. And I went, oh, you like the Archers as well? She went, Royfield, I'm part of the Dumdy Dum Facebook group. I was like, oh my God. So there you go. There you go. I just throw that in.
There you go. That's very interesting, isn't it? So yes. I'm glad that old school friends are coming out of the woodwork for you. Yeah,
absolutely.
I do get a lot of messages. It's quite interesting, really.
Yeah, so, you're anyway, the popular one. That's what you're saying.
It says mug. It says
no.
On my
you're popular. You're the popular one. I'm the one who just gets it. See,
all I do is edit. Back to bite you. Yeah, all you do is edit the thing. You're right. Yeah, you talk a lot as well. So, have we done all our calls, Royfield?
We've done all of our caller inners. Now, I think it's time to go to email inners when you're ready.
Yeah, I think we just had the one this week, and it's from Down Under. I've been listening to the podcast for about a year now and love it. I've not missed an episode of The Archers since 2004. Listening to you and Jacqueline and all the colorinerers, I can hear and feel the community you've created and maintained so very well. Jen's call-in last week was particularly moving. It gives me the feeling of sharing the Archers, even though I have not really participated, save by listening and doing so religiously, which is something I can't otherwise do. Not only being out in the Antipodes, but not knowing any other Archers fans. It made me laugh. I joined as Patreon, but I used my wife's account, who is Jennifer Wen. It was read out loud, and the funny thing is that she wouldn't know a David from a Ruth. I have to say that I'm green about the meetup in Birmingham, but I will be in the UK at the Cambridge Summer School in July, August. There's unfortunately no way of getting over there in April, but I'd love to be there. I've been wanting to call in a few times and we'll get around to doing it. Until then, thanks for the podcast. And that was from Martin. I think anybody who's in Cambridge in July, August, and Martin, you should all get together. I won't be there, unfortunately. I'm sure Royfield probably won't be either, will you?
Probably Canada.
Yeah. But Cambridge people, get in touch with Martin, fire us, and we'll see if you can all get together and have a mini dum-de-dum meetup in the summer holidays. How about that? So that was one message we received this week, which was brilliant. And thank you for finding us, Martin. Now let's hear what our social media gurus have been talking about on the dum-de-dum Facebook page with our wonderful Sandra, who's going to tell us what's been going on.
Hello, this is Sandra with a selection of the conversations from the Facebook group this week. Lillian McCarthy was really annoyed by two things in this week's episodes. Firstly, it was Helen not consulting Clary and Susan about the window and then manipulating Susan. The other was that Clary should be grateful to receive Susan's cast-off pergola. Carol Walker added that Helen had also imposed a new uniform on them without any consultation, which is again thoughtless and undemocratic. Paul Devlin agreed about the pergola, as Eddie could have knocked up a pergola any old time. However, Deborah Jean Miller had one put up and said it was pricey. Sally Owen thought that Eddie would have found some used timber. KP Cunningham said, "Is it me? Or did anyone else think it was highly improbable that a young lad would be hanging around an addled, grumpy, whining, old brummy bloke with not one redeeming feature on, not only his day off, but also his 21st birthday?" There was a lot of disagreement with that opinion. Darcy Jorgensen said, "Even as a wee bairn, I loved hanging out with those two generations above and ahead, hearing their stories. I cherish those times." Nicola McIntyre thought that he's a lovely boy who is making a connection. Exactly why he was drawn to nursing. I have known many similarly lovely young people. Peter Price said, "After what he has gone through, it's no surprise to me. Some people thrive on helping others. They make the world a better place." Lillian McCarthy thought that they had found some common ground when conversing about farming, and Brookfield in particular. And let's not forget Ben has a really good rapport with Jill. And we all know how grumpy she can be. Sarah Evans said, "How lovely is Ben? Going in before his shift to have a chat with Shutsykesy. Heart of gold, that one." And Raffle J was chuffed to hear Sykesy again. Lovejoy Acorn Clayton speculated that Sykesy will turn out to have been friends with Paddy, Adam's dad. Rob Williams didn't seem to think much of Friday's cliffhanger. Louise Lawton agreed. "As cliffhangers go, that was a molehill." Darcy Jorgensen can't wait for the kids' reactions, and she came up with their thoughts. Adam, it's your fault. Alice, it's your fault. Kate, Gaia met Karma in a yurt and over a chai. Debbie, the sound of crickets. Rory, so, do I still get my allowance? Well, that's all from me from today. See you later. Bye.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Sandra. And thank you to everybody who's posted their thoughts on the Dum-de-Dum Facebook group. Now, keeping on the theme of all things owned by Mark Zuckerberg, we should welcome our 10 lovely new members to that group.
Yes, we wish a very warm Dum-de-Dum welcome to
Deirdre Alinum,
Margaret Jones,
Joan Sinden,
Virginie Bannick,
Chris Bushwell,
Andrew Wilden,
David Thomas,
Fiognoglin.
What a wonderful name. Kathleen Gallagher.
And Dawn Reese.
Now, good people, now would be the time where if you'd written us a review, we'd read that out. You would be lionized. You would be immortalized on this podcast. If you want to get your name on the podcast, remember, this is the people's podcast. Why don't you write us a review on Apple Podcasts and we will read it out. And we'll even read out the bad ones because we don't really mind reading out the bad ones. You can always learn. You can always learn even from the most negative of reviews.
If you do
write us a review on another platform, you might have to email us and tell us, however, because we don't check every other place that can be reviewed. So if you're going to do it on Spotify, you might have to go, oi, I wrote one on Spotify. But if it's on Apple iTunes, we will basically know about it.
I listened to some Dumpty Dums on Spotify this week.
Oh, did you?
Some very early ones, yeah.
So good for you.
Very good. Are you and Lucy talking? You were very happy then. You were a very jolly chappy. So let's go back to our social media bits platforms. We are on Twitter and you can find us at DumDeeDum, where you can join in the tweet along fun by using the hashtag TheArchers with a capital T and a capital A, which helps the visually impaired to join in the fun. I can be found on Twitter as at Gilberto Sanguin.
Now, if it's Twitter we're talking about and Jacqueline being found on that platform, it must be time for Tweet of the Week.
Hello, Royfield, Jacqueline and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Purple Pumpkin here with a selection of Tweets of the Week. And my thanks as ever to everyone who tags at Dumpty Dum to make sure we see all the best ones. There's something weird going on with Twitter in its post-Musk incarnation, and some people can't see our tweets or other particular feeds, but we're all soldiering on the best we can. This week, hashtag The Archers Twitter has been very visual with lots of people posting funny photos. A special shout out goes to James A. at Exeter Dormouse, who posted a number of examples of possible overall designs and logos for Clary and Susan. James, I hope your brand building talents are put to good use in your day job. If not, you should think about joining the next series of The Apprentice. Now, here are the results of this week's poll for the best lines of the week, with all credit once again to this week's scriptwriter, Naila Ahmed. This week the choices were Adam saying to Brian, we've never been the conventional father-son duo. Susan saying to Clary about their husbands, don't worry, Neil is too sensible. Or Clary saying to Susan, he'll know we're at the Faircastle Fiddler Fest. The runaway winner was Clary with the Fiddler Fest. And here are my medals for Tweets of the Week. In bronze position, it's David from Barnet, at David from Barnet. Will the punters have to keep feeding coins into a slot for the window to stay open? In silver, it's Jem Butters, at Jem Butters. Can't the Archers combine the observation window and the stained glass memorial for a win-win? And in gold, it's Nick, at Check Your Sheds. I live my entire life by the mantra, hashtag WWBD, what would Brian do? So far, this is including drinking port for lunch and an incident at work, which is now in the hands of HR. Well, that's it for this week. See you all on Twitter next week.
As always, Theo, our purple pumpkin, that was tip-top, top-notch. Don't forget, folks, as well as Twitter, we can also be found on another social media, that is Instagram. You can find at DumDeeDum there, which is run by the lovely, lovely Katie. So follow us there if you like that platform.
Yes, and I'm also on Instagram, and my name is Jack, simply Jacqueline Berto. But I'm a bit boring because I just go on about my garden, my dogs, and walking in the forest, etc.
You're not really selling yourself much, are you?
Nah, I'm not. I really feel quite embarrassed about my Instagram line, but hey-ho, at least I'll be able to share lots of pictures when I'm in Birmingham, can't I? So, another thing. Thanks as ever to all our contributors and to our social media supremos and everybody that supports us, including Shambridge Fair Voices and to our podcasting godmother, Lucy B. Freeman.
There you go, folks. That's the end of another Dumpty Dum. See you all next week. Oh, and don't forget, Don't forget, buy your tickets for the Dumpty Dum and Archers Academic Mashup Weekend.
Yes, come along and see us and meet us. Even if you don't really want to, meet other people as well.
There you go. There you go.
Au revoir.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.